Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You're listening to the best of Montana Talks.
Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative. They do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I just sent out a tweet about 12 minutes ago. If I had to sum up what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, strip it down or shut it down. When it comes to this latest last-minute spending bill on Capitol Hill, that seems to be what folks across Montana are saying. Strip it down just to the bare necessities, those simple bare necessities, to quote the song from the movie Jungle Book, or shut it down. Anyway, we're going to talk about that and much more. We've got Montana's Western District Congressman and former Trump Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke with us on the phone lines here for the full hour. And we'll start with that spending bill here in our next segment when we have a little bit more time to chat. But Congressman, I chatted with you during the break there, and I think I interrupted a very important conversation you were having back on Capitol Hill.
Well, in many conversations, but I just want to point out that, look, the Bobcats are playing, and whether you're a Grizz or a Bobcat fan, at this point in the season, you know, we're all one fan. So it doesn't mean you have to change hats if you're a Grizzly fan, but you got to cheer. And let's cheer the Bobcats off to victory. They had a great season. They're looking good. Concentrate and play hard. I believe that the Bobcats are going to win.
It's amazing. I mean, in just the last few years, both the University of Montana Grizzlies have been to the national championship just last year. The Bobcats, 2 years before that, were in the national championship. I even had a Grizz great, Tuff Harris, on the show yesterday, and he says he agrees. He thinks the Bobcats could actually take it all this year. And so they host a semifinal home game against South Dakota this weekend. But, you know, I don't know. South Dakota, the Bobcats should beat them, but they've got a little more tougher competition in their conference with South Dakota State and North Dakota State over there, the other two teams that still remain in the fight.
Well, and not only the football teams, but the two universities are doing very well. Seth Bodner came in, new president, former Special Forces guy. You watched what he's done with the university. And, of course, we're losing Waddell, which is, she's been fantastic. But, you know, in my view, I mean, when you change over commanding officers in the Navy, you know, as long as that ship is first rate, when you make that chain of command, as it is, you know, the next presidency of the university is going to excel because Waddell put in place the exact right tools for the next president to excel. So, one, I'm excited about the game on the field, but I'm also excited about where the two universities are going.
Yeah, the news that Waddell Cruzado, the president of Montana State University, boy, did she build an empire during her tenure there at Montana State University. That is for sure. All right, well, we'll start with the spending bill, the last-minute spending bill, the CR, the continuing resolution. Some are calling it the cramna bus that they're trying to cram through at the last minute. All sorts of crazy stuff being thrown in there. Strip it down, shut it down. What does Congressman Ryan Zinke think, and how will he vote? We'll talk about that and more right after this. And we'll take your phone calls later on in the hour as well.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lounge.
Rocking around the Christmas tree.
It's a Yuletide tradition on Capitol Hill, an annual custom of rocking around a congressional Christmas tree, festooned with hundreds of legislative ornaments, Advent appropriations, and mistletoe modifications. A political Polar Express chugs through the halls of Congress nearly every December. It's always the last piece of legislation huffing out of the congressional station. All aboard, hollers the conductor. Get your Noel needs loaded into the baggage car of this train, or it's going to be left behind. So lawmakers decorated their Christmas tree in the only way they know how. It resulted in a colossal 1,500-page interim spending bill to avoid a government shutdown. House Speaker Mike Johnson proclaimed he would not do any massive bills like this before the holidays. So Congress finally passed a slimmed-down bill, definitely not a Christmas tree. It just kept the government running through March 14th. So no holiday crisis. Merry Christmas, but beware the Ides of March. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We are going to take you into January of 2025 with some great content, great guests, great hosts, and of course, your phone calls. David Noble will be in the house. Scott Aspenlighter in the house as well. So stay tuned to Montana Talks right here on your favorite radio station on through 2024, right into 2025 with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and be heard all across Montana.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. Big
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Imagine holding the record in track and field. So you have held the record. You've held the record in your respective category in track and field, and your record has stood for 20 years, maybe even more than 20 years. And then there you are, you're volunteering at your alma mater, and you watch somebody else break your record. So imagine holding the record in track and field and then celebrating when someone else breaks your record. Some might find that very hard to do. Some people might be disappointed to see their record fall. But it wasn't hard for former Montana State University Bobcat track and field great Aaron Graff. Aaron Graff now with us here on Montana Talks. Aaron, always great to chat with you, my friend, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Aaron.
So describe what took place. I think this was last Thursday at MSU.
Yeah, I was lucky that the track meet was a Thursday because normally they are Friday nights, Friday days. And with our kids that are in high school, they have sports. And so I'm never able to get to these meets to work. So it was a rare opportunity that I actually got to be there. So I was excited to take Razel, my freshman daughter, to go work long jump with me for a six-hour day. So it started with girls long jump, and Haley pulled out a over 20-feet long jump. And the record is held by Lacey Heinz-Peter, and that one, I think, is, like, from 2001. And her record is 20 feet 3, and Haley jumped 20 feet half inch, I think. And that was incredibly exciting. And Razel turns to me and says, "Ma, do you think she'll break your record in triple jump?" And I said, "Well, I sure hope so. You know, it's been 20 years. It's about time," which is how I have felt over the last 20 years. Anyway, so her first jump out was, I think it was 39.75 or something. So really close. That was exciting to measure that. Second jump, she was behind the board a bit, so it was shorter. I think that's what it was. Third jump, maybe it was a scratch. I can't remember. Fourth jump, she hit it, and I could see it in the sand. And I used to coach at MSU, too. And was really good at kind of being able to guess jumps pretty much down close to the inch. And I was like, "Oh, I think this is it." So printing that laser, we use lasers now instead of a tape measure. And you read it out and they do the calculation. It goes up on a board. And sure enough, there it was. And it was just really exciting. It was fun to see her jump around and, you know, everybody scream. And that's just what makes sports so exciting.
Yeah. So you shared this update from MontanaSports.com. I think they published it either Friday or Saturday, maybe over the weekend.
Yeah.
Quote, Billings native, and I hope I pronounced her last name right, Billings native Haley Coey broke Aaron Jones Graff's Montana State record in the triple jump with a mark of, over 40 here. And you talked about, and so you kind of shared some thoughts on social media about how excited you were to see this record fall and what you just shared about your daughter saying, "Wow, do you think she's going to break your record?" And then you're both there watching as she breaks your record. Why were you so thrilled, as you described it, to seeing not just this record being broken, but didn't you hold like four records over the years at MSU?
Yeah, I've been excited for every one. My first two records that were broken like 10 years after I was done was by a girl I was coaching with my old coach, Tom Idol. Her name was Carly McCutcheon. And I just poured my heart into her because I could see her skill and talent. Like, this is the girl that could break my heptathlon and pentathlon records. And so, yeah, I worked with her for a few years. And her senior year, she was able to break those, which was just amazing to be a part of that and to see that. And I actually didn't get to see my outdoor triple jump record be broken, but I did have the Big Sky Conference pentathlon record, which is the indoor multi. I had the Big Sky Conference record for, I think that was maybe about 10 years also. And it was Lindsay Hall, a Grizzly, who broke that. And I would always help coach her at track meets when needed, when her coach had to run around because we're all friends. And he, Brian Swain, he was an old Bobcat. And so Lindsay, I was also close with her, and it was so fun watching her break that record in Pocatello. And we ran to each other and hugged. And I don't know, for me, it just thinking about girls continually doing better and doing better. And I think coming from small town Montana and, you know, boys always racing me and just this desire to always show what girls could do, I just think is carried over my whole life. I just think the possibilities of what girls can do is just endless. And in sports, it's just the perfect place for girls to figure out their strengths and their confidence, to figure out how to work through, you know, self-doubt and pain and injury, and everything that girls gain in sports is just incredible. So seeing records get broken just shows how much girls can do and how much we can continue to improve.
When I was chatting with Katie Whitehurst, she's a track athlete at the University of Montana, with Lily Meskers, the young lady that you got to meet as well when Riley Gaines was in town, I asked them, how did you get into track? Because Lily Meskers talked about racing the boys, racing anybody for $2 bets at high school football games, and that's how she got into track. And then Katie Whitehurst talked about growing up on a ranch in, outside of Whitehall, and she would, you know, tie a rope to a tire and put a feed bag in there and drag that around. I'm assuming you must have trained out on the ranch south of Harlow.
Oh, I don't know. I just always loved seeing what I could do. And I think I appreciated track, you know, like field day one day a year in elementary school is my favorite day. And, you know, I'd go, and it's a small town, but I'd go win everything at field day. And it was the one place where I felt like I could truly just be me. And, you know, I did basketball, did volleyball. The coaches decide how much you play or how much others play. And, you know, track is just where it all gets to be up to you.
Your effort
and your, yeah, it's completely on you, and you get to decide to do seven events at state with two relays, or just one event. You just want to throw javelin. Like, you get a choice in how much you actually get to participate and how much.
Very cool. Well, hold that thought, Aaron Graff, if you can stick with us, because yeah, I want to talk more about why you were excited about your records being broken. It's a great message. And then there's another.
We'll be back with the Best of Montana Talks right after these messages.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Here's my list of things we've all gotten used to over the last 25 years that look to be different in the next quarter century. Low inflation and very low interest rates. Not an easy prediction, but forces like globalization that gave us the great moderation of prices look to be spent. Unlimited federal deficit spending. Politics won't kill ever-growing deficits, but financial markets and interest payments might. Limited growth in electricity demand. There's been close to zero increase in electricity demand since 2000, but electric vehicles, data centers, and heat pumps are changing that. Surplus workers. Labor markets will loosen somewhat in the coming years, but trends in demographics are reducing the size of the traditional working population, just as the bulge in retirees is demanding ever more personal services that require labor. America's military deterrent. Our country's ability to deter others from mischief was never perfect, but looks to be vanishing today. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Media Minute with Howard Kurtz.
The House Ethics Report on Matt Gaetz released yesterday is devastating. The report says he regularly paid women for sex, including an underage girl, one who was 17 years old, and also used illegal drugs on multiple occasions like cocaine and ecstasy, accepted lucrative gifts, including a trip to the Bahamas. He was uncooperative and knowingly and willfully sought to impede and obstruct the committee's investigation of his conduct. Gaetz also misused House resources when he he had his chief of staff assist a woman with whom he engaged in sexual activity in obtaining a passport, falsely stating to the State Department that she was a constituent. Now, Gates says, I was charged with nothing, fully exonerated, not even a campaign violation, and the people investigating me hated me. If he was still in the running for attorney general, this would have blown him out of the water. With your Media Minute, Howie Kurtz, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, a few more minutes here with Aaron Graff, the former Montana State Bobcat great in track and field, grew up on a ranch south of Harlow, Montana. And her and her husband, Eigen, who also was in track and field at MSU. He's a great guy. If you remember, Eigen was on the show a few weeks ago. He's a great home builder there in the Gallatin Valley. His family goes back several generations in the Gallatin Valley, and he's been very involved with the National Association of Home Builders and was a past president of the Montana Home Builders Association. And so we talked housing prices and more and housing availability with him just a while back. And but Aaron, yeah, she's an incredible artist and painter. In fact, Aaron, didn't you do a painting that that now is in Congressman Zinke's office back in Washington, D.C., if I recall, right?
Yeah, he had asked me if I had something for his office, and I said, well, since I mostly only do commissions, I really didn't have anything at that time. So he and Lola and I, and mostly Lola and I, figured out something of Montana for him. So it's a glacier park, McDonald Creek, that is one of his favorite memories, so he gets to see that every day when he's at the office, which is just wonderful to remind him at home.
Yeah, it's a beautiful painting. I got to see it. I can't remember if you had just finished it up or if it was still in progress at the moment. But, yeah, anybody who travels back to Washington, D.C., keep your eye out for that one. And if you've ever been to Warrior Taste Fest and you've seen some of the paintings that are done by several artists there where they finish the painting live right in front of your very eyes, I know you've contributed to that in the past as well. So, yeah, great stuff. So you share this. I've got your write-up on our Montana Talks website, and you talked about telling your daughter why it had been long enough that your records would stand. Because I've got to assume that if somebody holds a record, that they actually love being the record holder. And if somebody beats their record, well, now your name gets scratched off the wall and somebody else's name gets put up there instead. So that's why I think some people might be surprised that you were happy that your record was broken, because now somebody else's name is up there instead of yours. But you said this: I have been thrilled about every record of mine being broken. One, because broken records mean the betterment of women's sports and athletes. And two, because broken records continually show to the world the toughness and the strength of our girls and women through extreme hard work, pain and injury, lack of sleep, and being incredibly organized and focused. Anyway, anything else you wanted to add to that or just highlight there? I just thought it was a great message because, yeah, a lot of people would think, why did you want your name to be scratched off the wall?
Well, I think the last thing we want in any circumstances for things to be stagnant, for things to just stay the same. And it shows in world culture, mostly Western culture in America, just a continual advancement. And so last thing we want is our girls to just reach their peak potential and then it's done. Like why continue with sports if it can't get better? So I this was actually probably my weakest record, which was kind of surprising that it was still there. And so I have no doubt how Haley will just continually push that further out. But it was just kind of surprising over the years. It's just like, man, that's the last thing I want is that 40-foot record to stay there forever. Like it needs to be further, just because that's the potential of our girls, of our women all across Division I athletics. So it was exciting just to see for just sport in general, okay, now that's been improved. And then eventually someday someone will break Haley's record, and then that one will get record. And the last thing we want is for records to stop being broken, because then like I said, what's the point in doing sports if records can't be broken anymore?
It's such a testament to the American spirit of always pressing forward and looking out over the next horizon. You also shared your thoughts about the importance of protecting women's sports in what you described as an impassioned plea to save girls in our sports. And, it's fascinating because here you are, you're working the pits, you're volunteering to help out at your alma mater, you watch your own record get broken, you talked about why you were so excited to see that. But then another thought came across your mind, apparently, as you're standing there, mm-hmm. and you were so happy that your women's track record was broken by a young lady and not by a man, not by a man. I mean, isn't it crazy that thought actually crosses your mind, has to cross your mind now?
Yeah, well, it crosses my mind all the time. And the thing is, I was paying attention to this change sooner than a lot of people. It's been happening really since the early 2000s. And I think it was just so rare, nobody was really noticing. A big shift, and many Montanans don't know this or didn't realize it, there was a Grizzly distance runner, a kid from Belgrade originally, that was on the men's team at Missoula for a few years, and then spent a year transitioning and then competed on the girls' team and won the Big Sky Conference title. I think it was in the indoor mile, I think it was. Maybe it was 800. I think it was the mile. But it was a man that was competing as a girl and was so far ahead. And you can look it up on YouTube and see the race. But I remember when that happened. And I actually, a year later or so, I said something on social media about this issue. And one of the officials reached out to me privately through Facebook and just said he was working that conference meet. And he almost quit being a track and field official when that happened because he was so disheartened and disenfranchised. And for me, too, I lost support, emotionally for the NCAA as these things started becoming more and more common. And I just thought, for a program that helped me be an athlete, why are they suddenly not helping our girls anymore? But that was a big circumstance. A lot of Montanans didn't know what was happening in our own state. So while our state is protected a lot more now, other states aren't as protected, and they're encouraging this replacement of our girls. So it's crazy that popped into my mind, shortly after the celebration, and it was like a sigh of relief. Oh, I'm so glad I just didn't see a boy jump that, and I had to measure that. I'm so glad it was a girl. And I just hope that eventually, it's only girls that have any records in any sport, but that's not the case. There's been records broken by men.
Yeah, you said it is our girls who deserve to be national champions, Olympians, and record holders. And then you said, Haley deserves this record, and the next girl after her, who knows, maybe even your daughter could be that record holder.
Yeah.
And that was such a great way to make that point. You and I talked off air during the break as well that, you're not just trying to speak out against, the transgender issue and men trying to take away and men, trying to, take part in women's sports, but you're simply making the point that how important sports are for kids and for girls. And I think it was your husband, Eigen, who raised that very point in a Q&A session with Riley Gaines when she was in Bozeman. He said, people need to understand that there are tryouts for a lot of these teams, and that one spot that's taken by that man might be the one spot that your daughter would have had to be on that team. And being on a sports team or not, being involved in any activity or not, could be what decides the future path for these kids, whether they head down a path of positivity or whether they head down a path of alcohol and who knows else what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything in sports ties over to, female athletes have higher GPAs. They're less likely to drop out of school, get pregnant, drink alcohol. There's so many tie-overs to the success of the future life of a girl when they're done with sports that is tied over to her involvement in the sports. So even, I've pointed out to people before, what is okay and acceptable once means that it's okay and right all the time. So if you say that you have five starting transgender women on a women's basketball team and all five of them end up starters, could every person say that that is also okay? So if it's okay with one, say San Jose State, you have this girl and everybody says, well, it's so rare. It's, this boy that says he's a girl. You say this is okay because it's just one circumstance. But what if that entire team was transgender. That's, you can't say that's okay too. So if it's not okay in any circumstance, then it can't be okay in one circumstance, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, good, great point. Our producer, Caden, he's a big sports guy. He had a good question here. How do today's athletes compare to, say, athletes from 10 to 20 years ago when you set those records?
I don't know. You know, I think there's been a little bit of a, I don't want to say a tapering off. I think one of the biggest help in the advancement of all sport is training, AI, and you know, now you can get on like certain treadmills with hookups and wires that says what you're doing and what needs to change, and you know, your foot pattern, your stride pattern, even spikes, shoes, turf, clothing. You know, Riley Gaines has talked about the swimsuits they wear. 20 years ago, it wasn't that technology. So a lot of the advancements, too, I think, is coming with better understanding of training and better understanding of equipment. And then you add in, you know, technical wires and computers and all that that help, too. So a lot of things have changed. I don't know what the limit is for the body. I don't know if we'll ever know what the limits are going to be for the male or the female body. And only the future can tell that, I guess.
Food and supplements. I mean, there's been advancements in nutrition.
Your personal understanding. Yeah.
Yeah, the understanding of salt and hydration for recovery. I mean, all sorts of things. Yeah, who would have thought all this stuff even just 20 years ago?
Changes in weight training and, it's many things that have changed.
Yeah. Well, Aaron Graff, such an honor to catch up with you as always. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks for speaking out as well, because I know, you know, so many people, unfortunately, they just feel intimidated or pressured from speaking out because they just don't want to face any potential blowback.
Yeah. And the more that speak out, the more people will understand and be brave to speak out, too. So
do you have any time to do any more paintings if people are looking to get some artwork commissioned out there, or are you too tied up for
that's
now?
That's my full-time job. Just finished a 4 feet by 5 feet painting yesterday that's shipping to Fargo.
Wow.
So,
how can people get a hold of you if they want to see more of your art, et cetera?
Yeah, they can go to my website, aaronjonesgraff.com, and all my contact information is there, and ordering a commission. Thanks, Aaron.
Hey, yeah, thank you. Well, thanks for your time. Great to catch up with you as always. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Merry
if we
Christmas.
Don't see you before then. All right. Yeah, Merry Christmas. Quick break here on Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk. We've got the phone.
We'll be back with the best of Montana Talks right after these messages.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
How did Assad fall? What does the fall of the Assad regime in Syria mean for the U.S.? Who appears to be in power now? We got some incredible insight from two great Montanans earlier this week, including the University of Montana's Dr. Mehrdad Kia. And one thing that he and then our other guest, retired Major General Paul Vallely of Big Fork, what they both agreed on is this: the terrorist regime in Tehran, Iran, made the disastrous decision to take part in the attack on Israel, and our friends in Israel made them and their proxies pay. Plus, Russia's been too distracted with their war in Ukraine, so that's why this puppet for Iran and this puppet for Russia in Assad has now been booted out of power. But yeah, Dr. Kia, great to have you back on this show. What has changed since we last caught up with you on Monday, or what has become more clear? Because on Monday, people were still trying to figure out, okay, who are these rebels? Who is in charge now? And by Monday afternoon, you know, even General Paul Vallely said, oh, yeah, Jalani, he's an Islamist. The new leadership is not good. What's your assessment?
Yeah, I agree completely. I think what we have is the resurgence of one of the former branches of ISIS, the terrorist organization. Jalani was himself a member of ISIS. This group actually found a very small kind of territory just south of the Turkish border, and they set up camp. And then Turkey decided to finance and arm them and try to kind of reform them a little bit. Of course, reforming quotation marks. That is, you should abandon your traditional tactics of attacking innocent human beings, raping, decapitating, and terrorizing people, and act like a more like a rational sort of force. And Turkey had a very bad relationship with Assad, and to a large degree, Aaron, I think this is the revenge of Turkey against the Syrian government. But there are other forces. There is the National Army of Syria, that's in the south, and they receive some help, I think, from us and Jordan, as well as Turkey itself. There is also the Kurds in northeastern Syria. They have established an autonomous zone in northeastern Syria. And there are other smaller groups which are at least a bit democratic, but they are not very powerful. The arms, which means basically the ones with muscle, are the Islamists. Now, it is not surprising when you look at the situation that United States has started bombing ISIS camps again in Syria, and Israel has moved into Syria from the Golan Heights, from the south, and has taken over a territory which they feared the Islamists would set up camp there. But all in all, this was a huge blow to Iran. And it all started, as you mentioned correctly, in October 2023, after the criminal attack by Hamas against Israel, killing and raping and kidnapping innocent Israeli citizens. Israel warned Iran not to become involved, but Iran was already involved. Iran was militarily and financially supporting Hamas, though the Biden administration tried to deny it. Iran was behind this from the very beginning. And then the day after Hamas attacked Israel, another proxy of Iran, Hezbollah in Lebanon, started attacking Israel. This was all very coordinated. This was basically a joint attack by proxies of Iran. First Hamas in Gaza, then Hezbollah in Lebanon, and then the Houthis in Yemen.
Yes.
These are all proxies of Iran. They started attacking Israel, and Israel had to defend itself despite all the pressure from the Biden administration. And I have to tell you, my last sentence is that hadn't Israel continued its attacks on Hamas and Hezbollah, we would not have seen Assad fall. This is the result of sustained attacks and the refusal of Israel to listen to Biden administration, which basically destroyed Iran's proxy and ultimately resulted into Assad falling as well.
So the bad news is obvious, which is like, okay, the new leadership may not be good. They have this radical Islamic history. That's clear. But the good news is that obviously this is a major black eye and embarrassment for Russia, major setback for Russia and Iran in particular. And then on top of that, it's, you know, Iran was being allowed to get too much power, stretching further into the Middle East and closer into Europe. And so this kind of restores a little bit more of a balance between, say, the Arab versus the, you know, the Iranian, you know, world, I guess, if that's a good way to put it. Some are suggesting, yeah, your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the argument was, you know, especially from the Turks, but also from the Arab world, like Jordan and Lebanon, Iran does not even have a common border with Syria. It's not a neighbor of Syria. And why? What are you doing in Syria? And the answer is that Iran used Syria as a base to supply its most important ally and proxy, Hezbollah in Lebanon. And why were they so worried about Hezbollah in Lebanon? because they were arming Hezbollah to attack Israel. I mean, the whole strategy was centered around Syria being the closest ally of Iran and helping Iran arm a proxy so Iran could attack Israel. And I think this creates, of course, a much greater balance. I think that the Russians, and especially the boss in Moscow, was shocked by how weak Assad's response was this time. They have a base, they have a major air force base, but they also have a major naval base. I think they're negotiating now with the new government in Syria about the fate of the Russian bases. They do not want to lose, especially the naval base, because the Russian naval forces depend on it. And it's going to be a question of prestige. There is also rumor that there are discussions about, well, you lost Syria. We might be able to accommodate something in Ukraine, sort of give and take. I hope it doesn't go anywhere, because while I am completely for cessation of hostilities in Ukraine, I don't think Putin should be given any major concession. If we do that, then he will become even more brazen.
Yeah. And of course, you know, President Trump, we're already starting to see a lot of things moving and shaking in anticipation of President Trump coming back into power, and really a strong American president, at least in my perspective. I mean, we were on the brink of peace throughout the, between Israel and the Arab world before the Biden regime came into power. But, Israel, they showed the terrorists in charge of Tehran right now that they can strike anywhere and you won't even know it's coming. And then mysteriously, some Iranian leaders were, were dying in helicopter crashes and everything. Some have speculated whether Iran may be next to fall. The leadership in Iran may be next to fall. What do you think?
I think the wind is blowing eastward. I don't know if you heard an excellent message from Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday to the people of Iran, that Israel's basically hope is that now that Assad has fallen, the Iranian people, as they have done several times, though we have refused to help them, will carry the torch and will do the ultimate favor, which is overthrowing of the Islamic regime. As you know, and we have talked about it in the past, Aaron, this regime is very unpopular in Iran. All estimates suggest 95-98% of the population want this regime to be gone yesterday, actually. And they have paid a huge, huge price for their opposition. Tens of thousands of Iranians still remain in prison. If you think the prisons of Assad are horrible to watch, I'm waiting for that day when the detention centers in Iran open.
Are free, and the people are freed as well. Yeah, they've been kidnapping women off the streets. Absolutely brutal. Dr. Kia, I got to take
it. We'll be back with the best of Montana Talks right after these messages.
Your morning cup of Sean. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
A lot of insanity going on with the left. Headline, Huffington Post, my husband and his family voted for Trump. I'm canceling Thanksgiving and I'm canceling Christmas. You know, add to that, liberal women are planning to wear blue bracelets to signal to each other that they are liberal. Other women are slamming the idea, but and calling it virtue signaling. It's called the 4B movement. And some liberal women now are shaving their heads and they're stockpiling abortion pills. And they are swearing off physical and romantic relationships with men, even their husbands, and vowing to never have children. And some are planning to divorce their husbands.
The conservative underground meets later today on the Sean Hannity Show.
Hey, if you ever worry about the safety of your home, your family, there's no better time to act right now with Simply Safe Home Security. Now, one listener writes, quote, because I had Simply Safe, the man who burglarized my home is now spending 6 years in a New York prison. And right now, you, my listeners, get 50% off any new Simply Safe security system just by going to simplysafe.com/Hannity. Now, Simply Safe has the technology to stop criminals from even entering your home in the first place with their exclusive Active Guard outdoor protection. Live agents keep watch outside your property 24/7. You get professional monitoring plans starting about $1 a day. Now, Simply Safe is extending their massive Black Friday deal just for you, my listeners. This week, you get up to 50% off any new system with a select professional monitoring plan. It's the system I have. You'll love it. Just go to simplysafe.com/Hannity. That's simplysafe.com/Hannity, because there's no safe like Simply Safe.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We are going to take you into January of 2025 with some great content, great guests, great hosts, and of course, your phone calls. David Noble will be in the house. Scott Aspenlighter in the house as well. So stay tuned to Montana Talks right here on your favorite radio station on through 2024, right into 2025 with Montana Talks.
Frozen Services, where your journey begins.
Brought to you from the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. This is where Montana talks.
All right, we've got just a quick few minutes left here as we wrap up the hour. But yeah, I was chatting with Dr. Mehrdad Kia from the University of Montana during the break there. I spoke with Senator-elect Tim Sheehy this morning. He just got back from a trip to Israel. He was able to meet up with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. But, you know, with President Trump coming back into power January 20th and in some ways already being treated by world leaders as if he's already the president again, how do you think this is going to shape the future of the Middle East here in the near future, Dr. Kia?
I think that President Trump has a golden opportunity to kind of create or recreate what was at one point a far more stable region. And I think it all starts, Aaron, as you know very well, with providing support for our allies in the region, starting with Israel and allowing Prime Minister Netanyahu to finish the job that he started by completely dismantling the terrorist network of Hamas and Hezbollah, but also addressing the ultimate question. The ultimate question is the role of Iran and the Islamic regime. As long as that regime is in power in Tehran, the region will not see peace and stability. And I think something needs to be done. I am not suggesting, and I want to underline this, any military intervention, any U.S. Soldiers, Marines, Special Forces, underground. What I think we do need to provide, though, is technical and moral support to the Iranian opposition, and I do not want to go into the list, but there is a democratic opposition. Washington is very well aware of it. It's gaining momentum, and we need to support it to do the job that the Iranian people are waiting for, to get rid of this regime and bring back Iran to a normal state of affairs and as a normal player in international politics.
Well, and the alternative is we're going to see more nuclear proliferation across the region, because if they, and that's why it was so unfortunate. I saw that the Biden administration freed up even more money for the regime in Tehran.
Billions of dollars.
3 days after the election.
And I think one thing, I have to tell you, I think one of the first tasks of the new administration is to tell China to stop buying oil and gas from Iran. As long as the Chinese are buying and the Iranians are making money, they have money to support terrorism and their proxies.
And prop up their regime. Yeah, that's right.
What President Trump did in the first, in 2016, was basically negotiate with the Chinese. And that sanction on the sale of Iranian oil hurt that regime, brought it to its knees. And I think we should return to that policy. I don't know who runs the Biden administration, but giving Iran billions of dollars is almost like handing guns to a terrorist state and its proxy.
Exactly.
It's incredible.
Hey, Dr. Kia, we've got less than a minute to go here, but a great Dr. Kia is the director of the University of Montana's Central and Southwest Asian Studies Center. Paul in Fort Peck, Montana, just messaged us this question. Is the new leadership in Syria worse than Assad? And I know we only got 30 seconds to go. Your thoughts?
In the Middle East, you never know. It may become worse if we do not hold it and its main supporter, Turkey, responsible for any action that it might take. But for now, it is taking some positive steps, and we should encourage it to move forward, maintain communication with it, and maintain pressure on Turkey for its ally inside Syria, the new government, to behave.
Very interesting. Well, Dr. Mehrdad Kia, thank you so much for your insight, as always. You can see why he's always been one of the most popular professors in the state of Montana. Dr. Kia, thanks for your time. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Aaron.
We'll be back with the Best of Montana Talks right after these messages.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Here's my list of things we've all gotten used to over the last 25 years that look to be different in the next quarter century. Low inflation and very low interest rates. Not an easy prediction, but forces like globalization that gave us the great moderation of prices look to be spent. Unlimited federal deficit spending. Politics won't kill ever-growing deficits, but financial markets and interest payments might. Limited growth in electricity demand. There's been close to zero increase in electricity demand since 2000, but electric vehicles, data centers, and heat pumps are changing that. Surplus workers. Labor markets will loosen somewhat in the coming years, but trends in demographics are reducing the size of the traditional working population, just as the bulge in retirees is demanding ever more personal services that require labor. America's military deterrent. Our country's ability to deter others from mischief was never perfect, but looks to be vanishing today. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.